Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with John Donovan Jr., Managing Partner, and Victor Mendoza, Head of Oil and Gas Securitizations from Donovan Ventures. During the episode, John and Victor walked through their new equity retail offering called Energia.com, which is a new marketplace giving retail investors direct and transparent access to PDP wellbore-only minerals and working interest assets. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what John and Victor had to say.
All right, John, Victor, good morning and welcome on to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Morning, Tim. Morning. How are you, man?
Good, good. Interested in jumping in here. We were catching up at Mark last week and you were telling me about the new Energia.com platform you're working on. You know, Victor, when you and I bump into each other, we always trade commentary around ABS and minerals deals. And are we coming down market yet? And have you found a better mousetrap? And it seems like you have an ABS-like product that you're bringing to market for retail, and it could be a fantastic solution for minerals companies on the exit side and bringing new capital in that's fairly untapped, or at least tapping into the retail market in a different way. So really excited to jump in and explore that further. Before doing so, let's set the scene. John and Victor, introduce yourselves very briefly, kind of your career track, and then let's jump into a quick overview of Donovan Ventures, and then we'll jump into the new offering with Energia.com. So over to you guys.
Perfect. I guess I'll kick it off. Thanks again, Tim, for having us on. Victor Mendoza, I joined forces with John Donovan here about almost 3 years ago to start the structured finance team under the Donovan umbrella. Our main focus has been oil and gas securitizations, but we do capital raises for pretty much everything in the upstream space. I'll pass it off to John.
Yeah. So, Tim, thanks again for having us. You know, my background's been in the energy financial services world since coming out of school. Spent a few years at DLJ and the energy group here in investment banking, 5 years at Quantum Energy Partners, very early in that company's life cycle, kind of 02 to 07, and saw what those guys were able to do at a young age and said, why not give it a shot, and started Donovan Ventures in 07. And today we do kind of two pillars that we stand on, investment banking that Victor spends the majority of his time in, structured products and private capital, like you said, and then asset management, which consists of a growth equity fund, as well as what we'll spend a lot of time today talking about, Energia, which we kind of brand as floating income, not quite fixed income because it's commodity linked, but very yield-oriented access to oil and gas production.
Fantastic. And what I'd like to do, you know, Victor, over to you to talk about the ABS space. Give a little background, just kind of what you guys have done, a chance to recognize the hard work and the success you've had in terms of transactions. But in particular, from when you guys dove into this space to today, what have been the trends or what kind of evolution have you seen, both from an investor standpoint, you know, structure, and on the issuer side, whether it's a minerals company, a non-op company, or EMP company? So would love to paint the scene on just overall what the current state of affairs looks like for asset-backed securitization. And that, I think that'll parlay nicely into what you guys are working on with Energia.
Sure. No, that's a great question there. It's been a pretty awesome ride, I'll say. So starting, I'll go back to 2021. Our main focus really that year was educating investors, which is mostly, you know, US-based large insurance companies that end up buying these bonds, and educating, you know, producers, right, of the structure, the benefits of the ABS. So we probably spoke to 60 plus insurance companies that year, speaking to them about oil and gas in general, the structure for the ABS. We closed our first deal in 2022, early 2022. At that time, there were only three insurance companies that were participating in these deals in oil and gas ABS. We brought in four new players in our first deal. And then by the end of 2022, we participated in about $1.2 billion of securitizations. Our last deal, we had about 15 insurance companies that participated in our last transaction. So we, you know, very active year, 2022. I think, everybody was very excited coming into 2023. The pipeline was robust. Insurance companies were kind of knowledgeable on the ABS product. They are getting, you know, a bit of a premium compared to other ABS paper that they buy. So I think everybody was kind of lined up to have a banner year in 2023. Now, gas prices really is what kind of essentially is the biggest, you know, headwind for the ABS, right? I think coming into 2023, we had a pretty steep backwardation. The front of the curve was looking really good in terms of gas prices. And then we flipped. Now we're in steep contango, right? So it's a little bit harder to structure around $2 gas for the front year in 2023. So a lot of the gas deals, I think, that weren't hedged, that were kind of in the pipeline, are probably, you know, on hold right now. So I think that created a bit of a kind of a drawing out of the pipeline on deals. If you guys have been kind of following the market, there's really only been one transaction that has closed in Q1 of this year. So I think looking at the gas curve, we'll probably see those gassier deals come back to market in the second half of this year, where the curve gets a little bit better and people get more comfortable hedging. From our side of the equation, in terms of origination and trying to kind of adapt to the market, we started focusing more on liquids deals and smaller deals, right? So move down market. I think we've got to every ABS convention. We've taken issuers with us to meet investors. The feedback on the investor front is, you know, we've got the dollars. Please show us the deals, right? So I think it became a supply issue in terms of issuers and bonds out there that really is what's kind of holding the market up right now. But that created an opportunity for smaller guys, right? You know, the feedback we got and what we were trying to kind of discover in Q1 is initially insurance companies wanted more, you know, focused more on gas transactions. We wanted to see if the kind of the drawing out of deals gave it more appetite to go into more liquids basins. And in the same token, if they like the 400, 500 million plus transactions, are they willing to do 100 or below, right? And the resounding kind of feedback was, yes, right? We'll take a look. We're happy to take down, you know, a 75 million ABS by ourselves. We're happy to look at, you know, more liquids heavy basins, even though, you know, that was our preference before. And it's strictly because of just deal activity, right? So I think it's really actually a good, really good time to go out to market. I think one thing that we all need to test is, can we actually shrink a little bit the coupon, right? The premium that these guys are asking for if we have a little bit of a deal drag going on. So I think it's a really good opportunity to kind of, you know, go out and test the market. We've got indicative ratings on deals as small as 60 million ABS. I'm still hopeful that the minerals and royalty guys will take advantage of the ABS here, you know, this year. Smaller deals, every investor that we've spoken to, along with Fitch, they actually prefer a royalty deal, right? Which it makes a lot more sense for an ABS when you don't have to worry about, you know, OPEX, right? So all the, you know, long story short here, really good time to go out to the ABS market right now. There's a lot of appetite from investors. We can probably try to get, you know, some compelling terms for an issuer right now. And it's really opened up the smaller deals, the liquids heavy. So every product mix is acceptable now, and pretty much, you know, every size is acceptable now. So long as we have a diversification from the asset level, I think we can get something done pretty quickly.
So I have a question on the educational journey with investors. Would you, what I find interesting about ABS is the investor class is a bit different. So in a world where there's constant headwinds around ESG and access to capital, is it fair to say that these investors are yield investors first, oil and gas investors second, versus maybe an oil and gas investor that then has different types of structured products? Because without naming names, I know, you know, Ryza has been a leader in this space. One of the credit funds that backs them, their private equity portfolio exited oil and gas, and then has gotten involved with Ryza in a very big way. And, you know, when I started kind of snooping around that, The answer was, no, this is not the oil and gas group. This is looked at as a credit investment. So I think that's an interesting window of opportunity going forward. If you're looking to leverage ABS as a tool in the tool belt, that this is a different pocket of capital because it's viewed differently. And going into Energia, right, this is a structured product. And again, I think it's targeting yield investors, and it's not so much a focus on the oil and gas component. I don't want to oversimplify that, but what are your thoughts on that?
No, I think you're spot on. Yield first. I mean, look, it's not that they're not focused on ESG. They obviously are. But in the matured ABS market, right, CLOs, credit card receivables, all of those products have been in the market for 20 plus years. So the premium that they're getting on those is probably half of what they're getting on the oil and gas ABS, right? So this is a way to get a premium on an investment grade piece of paper, and that's the main priority. They are focused on ESG, but the way they're looking at it, right, it's a lot of the other ABSs as well have a 10, 20 year duration, right? The nature of the oil and gas ABS, obviously, you know, it's a declining asset, it's a declining curve, declining asset, and a quickly amortizing piece of paper compared to other ABSs, right? So your weighted average life on one of these bonds is probably going to be between 3 and 4 years, where, you know, there's the ESG component of it is, look, by the time ESG really gets traction and a big focus, all of these notes that we are putting our money into right now are going to be halfway paid off, right? And we can manage the ESG risk at a later date, right? So I think there's definitely still a focus, but I think the number one priority for them is yes. Like, let's look at the yield for these. And if it makes sense, we're willing to participate. And look, for us, when we started this, and I'll segue into Energia so John can jump in here. You know, Energia has been, you know, 3 years in the making, right? I think we started both processes, both products at the same time, essentially, with the, you know, the dream to bring new capital into the oil and gas industry, right? So we have a debt product and an equity product. We have the ABS, and then we've got Energia, right? We've got institutional investors, and then we've got retail investors, right? So every single dollar of the nearly $4 billion oil and gas ABS dollars that came into the market last year, that's new money that wasn't available to the industry before the oil and gas ABS, right? These insurance companies need an investment grade rating to be able to buy these bonds, right? So I think all of those, you know, those billions of dollars were not present in our industry, which is great for the industry. It's a great access to capital, and truly it gives that even the smallest guy access to capital markets, right? And not only capital markets, investment grade capital markets, which is, you know, kind of unheard of in our industry since only the majors have a corporate investment grade rating, right? So it's an opportunity, it's a tool to actually access that capital market, even if you're a small, you know, private producer. So I think on the debt side and the ABS side, you know, it's a great product. It's obviously now, you know, a lot of people know about it. I think, you know, it's got a place in every balance sheet. What we're most excited about now is, you know, how can we bring something similar and offer a monetization product, but on the equity side? And that's where Energia comes in.
Two things, Tim, that have helped us begin this migration that we'll talk about. Because we've done enough of these, I think, you know, and what's allowed us to do smaller and smaller deals is these documents are becoming hyper standardized. You know, we're spending a lot of time trying to bring some standardization to the space to allow us to get costs down to do this for other producers. And so I think you've seen that. And secondly, you know, the software that was built for the retail space has been well received within the rating agencies and the insurance companies as they look at this through sort of a stochastic lens and look at the true collateral pool and the performance of that volume through depletion. And you know, the weighted average life of these things is 3 to 4 years. So, you know, versus a real estate mortgage or something else with longer duration, they like that. They crave that duration as they shape their curves within their portfolio. So those two things of really taking that software and taking some of that documentation and underwriting and applying that to the retail space is what we're doing with respect to Energia, only now a producer, instead of getting a 65% advance rate on value, we can give them 100% of that value for a given collateral. So we are excited to talk about it and spend some time here with you.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information. As a leading global energy business advisory firm, Oportun is well positioned to provide world-class technical, financial, and operational capabilities to minerals and royalties companies. Whether it's back office outsourcing, resource and reserve definition, land due diligence and administration, GIS mapping, valuation work, data and system integration, financial reporting, tax advisory, or buy and sell side assistance, Oportun LLP has got you covered. For more information, please visit www.oportun.com. Noble Royalties has been a leader in the minerals and royalty space since 1997. Noble's experience and world-class technical team will assist in delivering effective solutions to EMPs, mineral funds, and private owners alike to maximize the value of their mineral ownership in this dynamic market. To discuss effective mineral solutions, whether buying or selling, in the Permian, Haynesville, Eagleford, or Bakken, please reach out to Chase Morris at cmorris@nobleroyalties.com or Shannon Manor at smanor@nobleroyalties.com. Farmers National Company has oil and gas experts located across the country ready to provide you unmatched convenience and service for your land management needs. Whether you're looking for turnkey management of oil and gas interests, or simply looking for an advisor to help you sell or lease your minerals, Farmers National Company has you covered. Learn more about Farmers National Company's team of certified mineral managers, landmen, attorneys, and accountants by going to fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
Yeah, I mean, to go down market is the major barrier, just the drag, all the fees associated with structuring something. So that standardization, is that really the silver bullet, you think, to be able to create a $10, $20 million offering? Because that's really what the mineral space needs, in my opinion. There's more players at $50 million. You know, there's players at $75 million. But my God, what an incredible and exciting prospect to think that as a minerals company, and just insert name here, family office fund that has $10 to $20 million in AUM, having this as an option at the right parts of the cycle is incredible. So is that really where the software makes a huge difference, is the standardization removing a lot of the costs in the middle?
I think it's one of many bullets. You know, we built this, like Victor said, over the last 3 or 4 years. There's a lot of things that had to come together to make this easy transaction. You know, we've benefited from watching the real estate space do it, you know, from having ABS experience and volume. And now, you know, we've gone so as far as to, you know, much like an ISDA in a hedging contract, you know, we've created a standardization of documents called an ISD that will bring sellers and buyers, and it's evolving, but it's intended to be much like a credit card application. Here are the terms and conditions, you know, sign and monetize or sign and purchase. And we're spending a lot of time in making that a fair and balanced transaction. And remember, this is a tool for the mineral buyer, especially given your show, to just bring that production forward. We're not looking to monetize your development. We're not looking to kind of buy low, sell high. We're really trying to increase transparency at a, you know, at a strip price, which, you know, by its nature has, you know, half of the people think price is going up and half of the people think price is going down, and setting that market there and allowing a mineral owner to monetize that on that given day at that given price. And it's at a midpoint. It's based on a futures curve that is published. And our objective is to create some of that standardization you talked about, but also transparency and making sure the volumes are there. You know, costs aren't applicable here, but as we move into the non-operated space as well, understanding and illustrating those costs and some of the variability to get ultimately to a net asset value.
You know, I think one of the questions that gets thrown out there just for food for thought a lot is, who is the ultimate end buyer? Who holds minerals into perpetuity? And when you're boiling it down to a wellbore-only PDP interest, You'd like to think it's the individual retail investor, right? And having it in a liquid market like you guys are trying to create just makes a whole lot of sense, because as the space gets more efficient and more competitive, margins are getting squeezed at different parts of the daisy chain on the A&D cycle. And this is a question that comes up a lot, like, okay, prices are changing on the ground and in the market through these cycles, but when do we hit that point where this is the end buyer price, and who is that ultimately? And I think with the standardization and enabling retail investors to get access direct, which isn't really possible right now, they can go through a public or through a fund, but there's still some barriers there, and it's not direct ownership, right? There's a management team and they're still undeveloped in there. It's an interesting thought and exciting again to think if you guys can get there and execute it. So listen, we're dancing around it. We've mentioned it a lot. Acknowledge I've been calling it Energia because my wife's Mexican and Victor's on the call, but I'm going to change to calling it Energia from here on out. So apologize for that. But what is energia.com? So clearly we're talking about software. Did you guys buy this software? Did you develop it in-house? Start from ground zero, what it is, what the goal is, and then we'll start digging into the weeds and unpacking it.
Yeah. So it's a labor of love. It's been 4 years in the making. You know, we first deployed it in a contractual role through Donovan Ventures at the ABS level. And as we got more familiar with it, and as we moved closer to commercialization, we actually acquired it through a company called DV Analytics, and its wholly owned entity is Energia. And so that's where we're doing all our marketing for oil and gas securitization, if you will, through an equity product, a floating income product. The goal is to just create transparency for the individual investor. We are looking for a clean way to offer access to oil and natural gas in the United States. Like you touched on, you know, it's very hard to get something that doesn't have agency risk related to hedging and leverage and G&A and development. There's not a lot of clean ways to do it. We think the market, with the success of this product, begins to bifurcate where you've got the production stream and you've got the development stream, and the mineral side of things will, you know, you think about how do you, you know, evaluate acreage. It's got two components. It's got a PDP and an undeveloped. And we think if we can create a product that provides transparency to the broader investor market, you know, we think the market we're talking about with direct investors is probably, you know, U.S. household assets are close to $7 trillion. You know, the commodity alternative program within that is about 5%. So you're talking about $300 billion of capacity interest in things like this with respect to oil and gas, with respect to timber, with respect to kind of that real asset portfolio. And a large, you know, the real estate's almost in an entirely different bucket. And so if we can provide a medium or an exchange or a clearinghouse that says, hey, here is, you know, with a high degree of probability, the performance of these wells into the future, you know, what are people willing to pay for that? And so we've given the investor two options. You can buy through two classes of stock for each program, a class U, which will be unhedged, or a class H, which will be hedged. And so you can even begin to think about, you know, sort of the...
And for the hedge product, because that's interesting, because there's a lot of family offices that don't like to hedge. They like the pure exposure. And then others just want built-in downside protection. Where's the happy medium on 50% hedge or 75 or 80%? I mean, that's typically driven by the debt that's taken on.
Yeah. You know,
when a company's managing the hedge program. But
yeah, this is solely in the investor's hands. If you buy the Class U stock, it's unhedged. It's completely floating. But as we spend a lot of time with family office and the RIAs and BDs, there's a component that says, yes, we want exposure, but we'd rather take a lower return in exchange for less volatility. And so you got those groups to the Class H, which would be it's a hedged class. And depending on the program, we will do that hedging at a 3 to 5 year period for 80% of the volumes. And so really,
yes, again, you're basically just you're just lowering the standard deviation of the return profile. And that's just that's really what the investor is looking at. I'm making up numbers here. Do I want 7 to 20%, or do I want, you know, 11 to 13, just right? And that's their preference. Okay.
And Tim, I'm long-winded here, but I wanted to close the loop on energy. And we've talked a lot about the product coming to the marketplace, but also the systems we've developed to allow the investor to invest seamlessly into these programs. And we hope to let that investor cultivate their program however they want. You know, we hope to have 15 programs on our platform by the end of the year. We've got a Mid-Continent one now. We've got a Bakken one as well. And as you think about the diversity of these programs, there will be oil, gas, there will be geography, if you will, sort of Appalachian or Mid-Con or Haynesville, Permian. We're solely unconventional. We'll spend some time talking about that. But we'll have new vintage, old vintage, you know, guys that want that quick decline and others that want, hey, I want 8% forever decline, you know, allow people to sort of express, you know, their true thesis in oil and gas futures, if you will. And so to do that, we've partnered up with a number of vendors to do both the subscription documents, the KYC. You know, we price these units daily. So we've got a daily NAV. Think about it much like a mutual fund. And so these investors, you know, through some of the software, will be able to get onto their brokerage accounts and see, you know, longer term, see this unit and its NAV, either through custodians or groups like AIX, iCapital, Case, you know, big alternative exchange platforms that a lot of these RAs are using. So you can go on today, energia.com, and buy minimum investment sizes, 25 grand, but into these programs that we're putting in place.
I mean, let's just have fun for a minute. Let's just say you get scale and this becomes established. Do you foresee minerals or oil and gas companies developing trading arms where they could potentially trade in arbitrage based on their view of commodity prices and where things are trading today? Because that type of liquidity at the interest level, at the real asset level, doesn't exist right now. But that's kind of fun to think about. And it's just, you know, opportunity in ways to make money reinvent itself over time. So that would be a new way to create value for investors in a mineral strategy through arbitrage and trading. Sure. Just your thoughts.
No, for sure. You know, we make the joke all the time, you know, the sausage king of Chicago who consumes, you know, BCF of gas in time is going to say, hey, here's an easy way for me to hedge my gas consumption by just buying exposure into gas wells. Or alternatively, the hedge fund that says, hey, I've got this huge short that I need to cover, and I'm going to go buy some long gas or long oil. We think, you know, you've asked about some of the restrictions, you know, because it's a private offering, you're restricted. There's lockup periods. And in time, though, those lockup periods go away, allowing a secondary market for these units, much like you've seen in the private equity space. So we intend to be a part of that as well.
Well, very good. Well, listen, at a high level, what you guys are doing is you're trying to create a marketplace for fractionalized equity ownership of oil and gas interests. You know, the old saying, there's no new ideas. There's just old ideas repackaged and combined in an innovative way. Fractionalized ownership, artwork, gold, this is a trend that's happening. Have you guys done your homework and learned from the lessons of those different sectors and trying to take what's worked and what's applicable to oil and gas and apply it here? Can you walk through that brain exercise?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think you hit it on the nail in terms of what's out there, right? I mean, look, I think the most established one is Cadre in real estate. Their approach is a little different than ours. They went straight to kind of mass media outreach in terms of getting investors, right? They had a big initial investor that backs up the transactions, and then they essentially sell it directly to the retail individual once they acquire these properties. For us, we're kind of going top down, right? Probably starting family offices, BDs, RAs. And just like we spent essentially a year educating the insurance companies at the institutional level for the ABS, we have dedicated capital markets folks that are essentially going out to the BDs, ERAs, and all of these conventions, essentially talking about energy and how you know their retail investors are going to have the opportunity to own direct oil and gas assets, right? So we deployed that about a year and a half ago. As John mentioned earlier, just 2 weeks ago, we essentially uploaded our first transaction. We're uploading our second transaction on, but our retail army is out there essentially reaching out to all these BDs and RAs. The question I think for everyone is, and the most important part is developing the market. I think initially, just like the ABS, took some time to get more investors in. I think it'll take some time to be able to fill, you know, some large books straight from the retail market. But, you know, the hope is to, you know, once everybody finds out and we start getting volume on both sides, you know, the asset side and then the investor side, obviously that time will shrink, right? And I think folks that want to monetize and I think, Tim, you brought it up earlier, which is a good point I want to kind of come back to. You're talking about the 10 to 20 million, you know, royalty guys out there. That's probably the vast majority of the market right now, right? So I think that's a little too small for an ABS, right? I think 50 million is probably, because you're right. I mean, look, we've done so much analysis on the fixed costs for an ABS, right? What's the legal cost, what's the backup manager, all the things that you need on an ABS. And we've definitely shrunk those costs. But as a percentage of total proceeds, you know, you're only going to be able to squeeze that lower, right? So I think once you move down closer to the 10 to 20 million, it's just too much of a percentage in terms of those fixed costs essentially to do an ABS. But for Energia, it's the perfect monetization. So if you're trying to monetize, we're essentially kind of removing the middleman. There's no 220 here. We're much, much cheaper than an AMD bank would charge for an asset sale process, right? So I think you're removing all of these costs. And for us, it's pretty easy to raise 10 to 20 million in the retail market right now. We've got pretty good vision on that. I think as we move to 50, 100 million, we can probably do it. It's going to take more time, but as we do more of those, it'll start shrinking into, call it, hopefully what we're trying to do is, you know, the same kind of A&D timeline that people are used to, 2 to 3 months, and then you get your money, right? And I think, you know, we'll be managing the back office stuff. So it's for the seller, that's really our focus. Is for them, it's going to look just like any other A&D transaction, right? They sell, they're out, right? For us, it's a little different. We have to manage the back office data. But I think in their view, it should be just as easy as anything else. On top of that, right, the real kind of prop value here is, look, if you're not selling to another royalty owner and you don't have to worry about, you know, a G&A and corporate structure, we should be able to get them a better price, right? If we're strictly focused on providing a yield to our investors, then the discount rate that we can offer them is going to be better than what they can get in the market. Right? And I think that's a real kind of value prop for the seller with Energia.com.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who, since 1929, has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com. Noble Royalties has been a leader in the minerals and royalty space since 1997. Noble's experience and world-class technical team will assist in delivering effective solutions to EMPs, mineral funds, and private owners alike to maximize the value of their mineral ownership in this dynamic market. To discuss effective mineral solutions, whether buying or selling, in the Permian, Haynesville, Eagleford, or Bakken, please reach out to Chase Morris at cmorris@nobleroyalties.com or Shannon Manor at smanor@nobleroyalties.com. Need energy industry management experience at your fingertips? Opportune LLP, a leading global energy business advisory firm, has the capabilities needed to overcome your minerals and royalties team's technical, operational, and financial challenges. To learn more, search Opportune's podcast E2B, Energy to Business, on Apple and Spotify Podcasts, where Opportune examines emerging financial and technology trends and provides a broad perspective on ways to stay ahead, create opportunities, and execute market strategies. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston, If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
Can you go, well, one comment on the, you think there's line of sight to raise 10 to 20 million in the retail market pretty easily. I would concur with that, or echo that, I should say. I've done a handful of 1031 related episodes recently, and the folks that do it from a minerals standpoint all kind of fall around the $5 to $20 million offerings. And that's the sweet spot. They can fill it fairly quickly, and then they rinse and repeat. And, you know, they've tried over the years to do something a little bigger, becomes more challenging to fill it. Then it's kind of sitting out there in the market. So I think just wanted to comment on that. It sounds spot on there, because you're essentially tapping into the retail market from a different lens on the 1031 side, right? But let's take a step back here. You know, John, when you're talking about, we're going to have programs out, right? And, you know, you guys are talking about the, you know, the subscription document process being standardized, and, you know, the 2 and 20 is going away. What actually is being offered here? They're actually funds, right? They're actually structured products you're putting together. They're wellbore only. You know, are they rated? Is there a management team? What happens if I invest into them? Am I now getting the interest deeded directly to me? Do I have to manage the minerals? Are you going to manage them? If it's working interest related, do I have to pay my percentage of OPEX? You guys have, I'm throwing out all the different things I may be considering right now, if I'm listening, because in theory, it all sounds great, but then there's a lot of little details that can complicate it and make it go off the rails. You guys have, you know, done a lot of work to structure something and package it very, very clean so that the investor is getting yield and getting a monthly distribution that's net of everything. So let's really lift up the hood and explain the mechanics of what this actually is. It's a Reg D offering, correct? So a lot of folks will be familiar with that. Just break down the nuts and the bolts of it.
Yes, it's a Reg D offering. It's a 506B, and it's an LP GP structure. Donovan Ventures is the GP, but you don't get, you know, the LP interest buys the assets and then sells down units into its fund. The fee is simple. Like Victor said, it's not 2 and 20. We're charging a little over 10 bips, or about 1.25% annually on the NAV of the asset. And again, it's meant to be extremely low load to the investor. It's meant to be very mutual fund-like, where there's daily marks. Again, transparency and what that asset's worth is hyper important in today's world, especially as you see what's going on in the real estate space. But then also, I think differently is, you know, if you think about what you're buying a pool of production, and we're selling, you know, pieces of that pool every month through depletion and production. And so that investor, you know, a typical package is going to, you know, generate probably 20 to 30% of its investment back that first year. That second year is probably 15 to 20%. That third year is, so it's very high income association, to the point you get payback in sort of a 5 to 6 year period. Again, depending on the production profile and the cost structure.
Yeah. And because it'll be a liquid market, what is the lockup period? You mentioned there's one initially.
It varies. I mean, this is regulated by the securities market, but it's a year for the most part. There's depending on your investment size and affiliate definitions, that can change, but for the most part, it's 1 year.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Victor, you were walking me through some slides yesterday, kind of comparing a typical real estate investment that's more development heavy, and it's really backloaded, right? Your exit and everything is where you're getting majority of your return. The reason you guys are focusing on unconventional is that flush production type nature of the curves, right? And so you mentioned getting, you know, you're more front loaded on getting your cash back, which is interesting for certain types of investors who want to maybe stay in it for 3 or 4 years and then monetize and then do it again and kind of roll their investments over. It's an interesting concept. And so paybacks 5 to 6 years, what kind of return net of all the fees and sales load and everything are you guys offering here to investors? It's fairly standardized as well, correct?
It can vary, again, depending on the performance or the package. But before we jump to returns, I think a few more points. I think something that's jumped out to us that we didn't fully appreciate is the LPGP structure, because it's, you know, there may be 1,000 investors in each of these, depending on size and distribution of each investment. The producer or the operator is only going to see one entity on their run sheets and their payrolls, so, or their pay statements. So it's very efficient. You know, we focused a lot on the minerals. It's easy for the non-op guy though as well. You know, we intend this to be a financing tool for them. Again, we're not trying to buy the undeveloped. We're just trying to bring forward that production. This is way cheaper than equity into your sort of corporate enterprise, or we're selling equity in your company. And so we want to be a financing tool and open this market to new investors. So that said, returns, you know, I think it depends on your, again, if you're buying that class U or class H, that's going to mitigate some of your performance. But talking just the unhedged stream for now, on the mineral side, we think, you know, because our NAV fee is about 1.25%, I think the market, we don't know where the market ultimately settles. You know, right now we've got expectations where our conversations with producers and with investors, things start to clear. The non-op space, I would say, is probably a PV 12 to 14% on the PDP, where we can give you, you know, PV 12 for your PDP or PV, you know, PV 12 to 14, just depending on the particular package. And if you take out fees, costs, you know, underwriting, closing, that's about a net PV 10 to 12% to the investor. And again, that's a not a cash yield. The cash yield is much higher, but that's sort of a discount rate, if you will, that's familiar to the oil and gas space of performance. I think, and now once you, so that's at the asset and fund level, there's additional leakage sort of in a second derivative to the extent you're buying through a broker dealer, or you're buying through your RIA, or you're buying direct through the website. All those have different components to them that we don't have a lot of control over. You know, what does your investment advisor charge you? That RIA is generally a, you know, they're charging you an AUM fee on your stocks, your bonds, your real estate, whatever assets they're managing. Broker dealers, it's very transactional. You know, even the wirehouses like Schwab and Fidelity are going to charge you, you know, 3 to 6% for their broker dealer affiliations. So it's you know, there's some leakage depending on which channel you've acquired through. But for the most part, our rule of thumb is we can offer a producer 12% discount rate, and we can offer the investor a 10% discount rate. And that gap covers most closing costs. Interestingly, the mineral space may actually come down from that because there's no operating leverage. You know, we think that that may be a closer to 10% to the producer or the owner, seller, and 8% to the investor. We just don't know yet, Tim. I mean,
that's why it's a marketplace, right?
We've got a sales force, and then how these things trade. You know, if gas goes to $9, does that, in theory, that discount rate should go up just because there's fewer people? Well, I don't know. You would think that goes up just based on price expectations of the curve, but if you're buying on the curve, that's the midpoint. Maybe it doesn't.
Well, so on the topic of returns, I'd like to open this back up across the debt side with ABS and also this equity product in this interest rate environment, right? You look at the risk-free rate is 5%. It becomes a challenge for other yield-oriented products, right? They have to be competitive with that. You know, minerals is a lower yield investment versus a working interest, you know, in terms of risk. So the numbers you're talking about in terms of where the industry typically trades, I think that's very, very compelling. But a lot of these investors will not be NCAP, right? Without raising money for oil and gas, and their job is to deploy money in oil and gas. Their job is to maximize return and be industry agnostic. So when you're going out with your retail squad, educating the market, when you're working with the insurance companies on ABS, where interest rates have climbed in the last year, what is that conversation like in terms of comparing the alternatives out there and how attractive these can be?
We have this debate a lot internally. You know, it's funny, the industry, despite interest rates, we've always talked about PV10. You know, SEC does it on a 10K. There's always this implied discount rate of 10%. It's just been the standardized number across uniformly over decades, really. And so, you know, I believe those spreads actually tighten. And And a function of that's going to be people's expectation of price. You know, people are buying this product because they want access and exposure to oil or gas prices, the commodity itself over the longer term. So, you know, we price everything on an IMEX curve, you know, daily, like we talked about NAV. You know, as you run different scenarios where oil goes to 100 or oil goes to 60 or gas goes to $6 or gas goes to $1, the performance of that investment changes. You know, you can generate 25% rates of return with an escalated price deck, but you can also, you know, lose a third of your money with a deceleration in price. You know, I think you mentioned that, you know, it's we're just trying to create a product that gives true access to the commodity itself. We're not levering it. You know, we're offering hedges for, you know, for some reduced volatility. You think about private equity, I think a lot of the private equity firms for a while there were simply LBO shops. They were out trying to lever and buy low, sell high on a large PDP allocation. And I think some did very well there. Others didn't perform as well. I think where you see, you know, Quantum succeed and NCAP succeed and some of these others was, you know, their true value is the development component, really converting, you know, acreage or minerals to production. And then how do you sell that production? And I think you'll see again, we think two asset classes within upstream. You'll see, you know, hopefully us as the production conduit and private equity more of that 2 and 20, 25% rate of return targets that'll be more focused around development.
So I have a question. You know, I'm racking my brain going back to my days of studying my securities exam for the Series 7. There's the different types of offerings, fill and kill, and I forget the names of the other ones. But where I'm getting at is you take an offering out to market, let's just say it's 20 million, and 15 million gets filled. Is it 75% of that package is now floated in the market and the seller retains the other 25%? Does it get pulled? Do you have other mechanisms to maybe backfill that, call it family offices or funds on deck, and they maybe get some different type of metrics, or maybe you guys have an account in-house to maybe backfill that? What, talk to me about those dynamics. This is speaking to potential issuers who are listening today who might be interested.
Yeah, I think all of the above are options. We're best efforts. So we will put a $20 million package on the program, and if 15 shows up, then we'll go to the seller and say, look, we got 15. Do you want to sell a 3/4 divided interest across all this and keep the other quarter? We've got, you know, backstop capital that has a higher coupon, but it's more certainty of close. You know, do you want to blend that and sell it all? I think there's ways to do that.
It's just like any offering. You're talking to the issuer and the issuer determines it, essentially.
Correct. Tim, the seller has the ultimate final decision, right? They can pull the full package and say, oh, no. Right. But look, when we go out to the retail market, we go out with, you know, with a valuation in hand already, right? Because the selling agreements and all the documents have to have is exactly what the investor is buying, right? So the seller will know what we're going out in terms of a PV discount with, right? So if we say, hey, we got you 15 million at PV 12, which would be great. Do you want to take 15 million at PV 12 today? They can say yes, or we can say, hey, we have a family office that actually wants it at PV 16. So do you want to sell that, you know, the last 5 million at PV 16 and be done with the whole thing, right? And it's kind of their call at that point.
Every seller is different. You know, every seller has a different objective or a different investor base. You know, some are willing to say, I'll let you hold it out there at 12 as long as you want, John. Others saying, look, we just need to move this. We'll do it at you know, 16 to 18 and just move it for us. But I think that's different than what Energia's objective is, the latter. You know, we are trying to set a marketplace at a clearing price. I think what's really unique, Tim, as well, different than the current A&D markets is, you know, we're signing close and, you know, it's based on strip that day. So if prices go up, sellers are saying, great, we'll sign that PV12 now as an extra $2 or $3 million to us. Alternatively, if gas goes to 175, sellers saying, look, I'm not a seller at this price, we can leave that on the platform and they get to elect when they want to close. Typically right now we're doing it at the end of each month, but that's very new to this space.
Yeah, that the ultimate vision is, you know, if I'm an investor right now and I go on Energia and I look at it, the strip today is $84 and I click invest now, I lock that in. And whether it goes up or down in the next however many days that the offering's out, that's just at that moment in time when you invest is what you lock in, correct?
Well, you subscribe in escrow, we've got to have critical mass and volume. So we actually close, the day we close is when we set price. And so you'll have sort of a last look, if you will, of, hey, subscriptions are here, we're closing on the end of the month. Based on whatever that curve is, you know, are you in? And so you get the price, not necessarily when you subscribe, because if you put in your 100 grand 2 months before closing, well, you're getting it at the closing date of that transaction.
You know, an interesting mental exercise. You know, I think, let's use gas as an example, right? You're a mineral firm doing a transaction with another mineral firm and you sell a Haynesville asset December, right? You go into PSA. Diligence takes 60 days. Gas goes off a cliff. A lot of times your reputation is essential in the space. So you don't want to be known as the firm that retrades or backs out. So you might eat it a little bit and hope things rebound, but you'll stick it through because of the importance of, you know, future deal making and having the reputation of I do what I say, I stick to my word. If you're a retail investor, you don't really give a shit. No one knows who you are. So if things go down in that same scenario, you just pull the plug. How do you foresee that happening? It produces a new level of volatility in deal making, no?
I don't think so. I think, remember, we're just wealth, we're not development. The legacy way of doing things has a lot of development exposure to make up some of that price gap. It's not a one-to-one to your PDP value. Here, we're really creating a product that allows the lowest cost of capital or an attractive cost of capital for an expected rate of return. And so that is based on a forward curve. So I think the seller has to get comfortable. There's no obligation to close. If price falls, we don't have to close, or the retail market doesn't have to close. If price goes to, you know, the other way, if it rises $2 or $3, you know, there's no obligation for seller to sell. We will adjust that price just like the investor will see once he owns it to an NAV, and that NAV will float. And so, you know, as you sign LOIs with us and we put your program in sort of our sandbox, it's fun. You get to see that NAV float daily and you can say, gosh, I lost, you know, we've had a few packages there that are over the last, I guess that's probably 4 weeks, it's up and down $1 million or $2. You know, the grand scheme of things, it's not a huge number. And again, we're here to create transparency. Buyers and sellers are clearing at an expected curve. And like anything, if prices go up, asset goes up. If it goes down, asset price goes down.
Interesting. No, it's a different dynamic. I'm excited to see that play out for sure. So we've been using the hypothetical example of a $20 million offering. Why 20 million? Why not 22? Why not 18? I think that what I'm getting down to is the valuation, the engineering. And this is the inherent challenge of doing these types of things in oil and gas because of the expertise and the specialty that's needed to understand a decline curve and all that. You know, Victor, when you and the team were showing me Energia's platform yesterday, there's some pretty robust, large, you know, big data, statistical analysis, AI-driven valuation tools that are built into this. So my initial pushback was, okay, well, why, like, how do you get comfortable with the AI number being the correct number? Over time, with a track record, you can establish market pricing. That's the whole point of having a clearinghouse and a marketplace, but it's chicken or the egg. How do you get that? Is a third-party engineering report still going to be involved at some capacity to get people comfortable with the old ways of doing things? And, you know, the fact that it's wellbore only in production is helpful because it removes a lot of the art of valuing PUDs. I mean, I think it's wild how different people value upside. It's just, that's why you run A&D processes, right? Because, you know, you see where the market's at and it changes. But production can be very statistically driven, just the law of numbers. So talk to me about all that. And I'm sure a lot of your conversations with Fitch and doing ABS fed into this, right? This approach of statistical analysis and lowering risk. But over you guys to explain that side of Energia, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. So look, we actually, on the ABS side, we've used the analytics to evaluate, you know, production predictability. There's also a component energy, energia.com that focuses on parent-child issues, you know, frack hits, proximity to other wells, proximity to permits, and keeps track of all the permits in place. It does back testing on volumes for fracks and like the proximity and the impact of that every single well that had an impact when there was a well being fracked or well adjacent to it. Right. So there's a lot of statistical analysis that we use on the ABS side as we started focusing up more on unconventional assets on the ABS side before people were really doing unconventional assets. So we needed these tools to kind of bridge that gap of risk, right? I mean, there's obviously much more drilling in unconventional basins than there is in your conventional, you know, old mature gas fields, right? So we used it with the rating agency, with investors as a supplemental tool, right? And did not replace third-party reserve report engineering, because that's just the industry standard. Now, a lot of people got a lot of information and got comfortable with certain risk using, you know, the Energia, what is essentially DV analytics. But I foresee, and this is what we've contemplated initially for Energia.com, we will still need the reserve report for the specific wells, right, that are going into it. It's a separate stamp of approval, but we will provide the valuation that DV analytics comes up with, and you can compare it with the reserve report. Right. I think historically, you know, we've done back testing on, you know, I don't know, 30, 40 assets, right? In terms of what does the reserve report look like compared to what actual results look like when we get private data and to what, you know, DV analytics is spitting out as the proper decline curve for the overall package. It's usually not that wide. Usually the variance is between 2 and 4% of what the reserve report says in terms of volume, right? Costs, that's a completely different story. Now, you know, royalties, you don't have to worry about that as much. But having the historical LOS and assigning the proper, you know, per unit cost and what's the breakout between fixed and variable, that's for the PDP where the real kind of meat and potatoes are when you're talking about valuation, right? So yes, it's much simpler from a PDP standpoint. I still think we'll rely on a reserve report that will go out to the investor and they'll have that piece of information, but they'll also have, you know, what we're providing from DV analytics standpoint. And you're right. I think, look, at some point, you know, if we don't have to wait for a reserve report before 8 weeks and we have the track record and investors get comfortable with the DV analytics and what we've done so far, I think that'll just speed things up, right? And I think that's the ultimate goal. But from day one, we'll have a reserve report and we'll also, you know, look at historical actual data and information as opposed to just, you know, public data and analytics. So I will do kind of a triangulate evaluation using all the historical tools along with our, you know, DV analytics tool.
Yeah, and as you guys go into the future and you have more deals to reference with the DV analytics and you establish that as quote unquote market pricing, have you guys fiddled around with the idea of a, like an independent committee of sorts that, you know, whenever I talk to software companies in the mineral space, you know, Trax comes to mind. They do a lot around the computation of title. There's always a second set of human eyes that looks over the AI and just fact checks it, but it's far more efficient and cost effective to do it like that. So do you envision a committee maybe, you know, just overlooking the AI valuations, and that's a way to expedite and get closings done faster instead of, again, waiting on the engineering reports, which if you can have a large offering, lots of wells, just takes more time.
Yeah, there's a lot of redundancy, Tim, in auditing the outputs of these programs. Whether it's internal, whether it's third party, we've got due diligence firms that a lot of the RIA and BD channels rely on, third party firms that provide program reviews and sponsor level reviews, groups like McLaw, FactRight, Buttonwood. So there's a preponderance of review on the AI channels. Even, you know, one of the first checks we do is seller and machine comparison. You know, are those two aligned? You know, because that's important as well when, you know, sellers' expectations may not meet up with what the machine puts out. And I'd say we tie quite often And when we don't, it's generally a lack of information more than it is the assumptions and drivers there. So feel very comfortable about the preponderance view. And that's kind of, you know, right now Donovan Ventures is the sole sponsor in these programs. But with Energy as a platform, there's no reason that anybody couldn't come in here and sponsor. I think that's intended to be the white glove, if you will. And so, you know, would we sponsor a deal for NCAP, you know, and let it be its own sponsor? Probably not. You probably don't want it, the seller being their sponsor, but I think there's ways that others can participate in this program if we're going to scale it like we think we can.
So Tim, to answer a little bit differently, it's a good question. Look, we have to have internal controls and internal audits, right? So from the modeling to the AI, we actually have third-party firms kind of reviewing the inputs that go into the AI and how that actually flows, make sure that's correct. And the models that essentially are part of the software that comes out with the valuation, we have to have those. And we can provide those kind of who does that for us. And then separately from a fund level, we need to have, like you just mentioned, an independent investment committee opining on the valuation before it goes to the investor, right? So there's internal controls, and then what I would say it's an external kind of like final actual human committee that is going to be, you know, formed. And we have some of the folks already in place that have the experience, have, you know, really good pedigrees in terms of, you know, traditional oil and gas valuation, right, experience. And that's part of what we need to do as a broker dealer that's putting these together, right? So we need to have those controls, and we do have that. Yeah, the reserve report is going to take time, right? And I think that's part of it. But we essentially kick off, and we're, you know, whatever we need on the due diligence side can, you know, essentially and just at least start with us going out to the retail guys, right? And once they say, okay, where's the reserve report? It should be ready after they do their initial due diligence, and then we provide, you know, the rest of the materials. So that's how we're kind of running things right now. But it's a good question, and it's something that we obviously have to focus on, and we have done so.
Well, excellent. Gentlemen, really great conversation. Thanks for coming on. I applaud you for the innovation and creating the next inning and chapter in minerals and non-op. So I wish you all the best. I can't wait to see it grow and more offerings to come to market and close. For those listening who are interested, where do they go? Who do they reach out to? We'd love to help, you know, expand y'all's reach into the market and help get more deals done and more capital into the space. So over to you.
That'd be great. Yeah. Energia.com, whether you're a producer or a buyer, I think that's the best place to start. Certainly reach out to Victor or myself. We can point you in the right direction.
Fantastic. All right, gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your morning and look forward to catch up in person soon.
Thanks for having us, Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Cheers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties podcast is meant for informational purposes only. Tim Powell and the Minerals and Royalties Authority are not promoting any specific securities or investments, nor are they providing any type of investment advice. If you enjoyed the episode, then I encourage you to tune in more and also check out the Minerals and Royalties Authority YouTube channel. Thanks, and see you next time.